for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com. Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania breadsticks, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 17th.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back, hour two, and happy to head down to Ocala and bring in Jessica Martini from TDN after a good, solid opening to the four-day sale. And Jess, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hour two is always the best hour, right?
Yes, based on...
it is today, anyway.
Well, that's true. I mean, it depends on when you and Christina... Is Christina with you?
Christina is here, yes.
Yep. So, she of the long torso.
Never gets old. She's going to follow her for the rest of her life.
Well, we're following the action from here. And, you know, the Arrogate... leader yesterday, the $1,450,000 colt taken by Donato Lanny for Zidan. Kind of a familiar theme down there this time of year.
Yeah, I think it was one of those horses that everyone saw and said, oh, yep, we know who's going to buy that one. It was definitely their kind of horse. They're looking for Derby horses, and this one had that written all over him. And obviously the connection with Baffert and Arrogate, they're partial to that stallion. So no surprise there when Amir Zidan struck for that horse.
Who else was involved in the bidding?
You know what? I didn't see they were out back. I know at one point Jacob West came in and somebody said, who was out back then? He said, it wasn't us. So I don't know who the underbidder was.
Well, we'll get to the us portion, meaning Rapoli / Viola, who did not make a splash yesterday, but talk about some of the other knockdowns here that I gave everybody the top five, and I looked at a couple of different interesting stories. Bolt Doro Phillies making a splash yesterday.
Yeah, I mean that filly was really well liked, obviously worked well, and Lyle Stables, they stable their horses at the Demerick's farm, so they were familiar with the filly, and they were most determined to get her. I think the Bolt Doro filly that was hip three that worked really fast on the first under tack, so got sold privately, I think, for
yes.
300. So that was after the fact, but that one got done as well.
We talked actually Monday. That ended up being a horse that was featured Monday in conversation with Mark Board and Brandon Rice. And in addition to that one, the RNA, I think, was in the 400. I think I saw the listed reserve is 450. So 300,000 to, you know, to close out the, you know, to close the book on her. But there was also the Tom McCrocklin that was 375,000 to November Hill. This is the filly late in the session too. Hip 249 that was a 21 flat quarter breeze. So three Bolt Doros in basically the top, you know, 15 or 18. 850, 375, and 300,000.
Well, they've proven it in the sales ring. They've proven it on the racetrack. So why wouldn't you, right?
I would say. Phillies actually dominated. I'm just noticing this. Dominated, let's see, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13.
Interesting because at March it was all Colts.
That's right.
I think at this point it might just be, you know, where the good Phillies are and where the good Colts are. I don't think it's a trend necessarily.
The of the top 15, there were eight fillies and five colts, and I mentioned, and again, I did not fine tooth the results sheet, Jessica, but it sure seemed like there was a big variety of buyers, a big variety of consigners, and a big variety of stallions.
Yeah, it was spread out. It was definitely a domestic buying bench. I think there weren't any international buyers in the top. I think the Koreans were busy in that middle market that they've made their own in recent years after the pandemic when they weren't allowed to buy here. So they were kind of the middle market. But mostly at the top, it was a domestic buying bench. And you mentioned Vinny Viola, that he hadn't made a big splash, but actually he bred that Twirling Candy that was the $800,000 horse that had RNA'd it Keeneland September, and they brought him back here and got $800,000 for him.
Very nice. And that Oliver St. Lawrence.
That would be an international buyer.
Okay.
There goes my domestic buying bench theory.
Because that was not a name I was familiar with.
Yeah, so he buys for a client in Dubai. They race in Dubai. They had the filly that came over, the one, the UAE Oaks, a couple years ago, that then joined Todd Pletcher's bond. Shahama, I think, was her name. So they're trying to do the same thing. They bought that filly at this sale a couple years ago, had success with her in Maidan, and brought her back over here and had great stakes success with her over here. So they're trying to do the same thing with this Twirling Candy colt.
Some other, just looking at buyers, some other names, they're very, you know, very familiar, in this marketplace. I mentioned that, the Greens, DJ Stable and Gary Barber partnered up on that Uncle Mo Philly out of customer base. That's customer base is, that's Glen Hill.
Right. Glen Hill. Mm-hmm.
675 for that, filly that went in 10-1. And, then the Greens also, a Maximus Mischief filly for 85,000. So they're on the board early. Dennis O'Neill, a $200,000 Flame Away. And that's, you know, that came early.
I think Flame Away might be a sneaky good stallion. It seems like the wise guys are gravitating towards him. I think he's going to do well.
Who brought Flame Away up all the way regularly through his as his offerings started to hit the sales arena? It was me, actually. Yes, I've been a Flame Away. Listen, I don't have to be that clever. Anything from Scat Daddy, all the Scat Daddy sons are going to hit.
Okay.
That's my theory. I'm not being overly clever. One thing you can always count on at these sales is Seth Klarman buying unusual pedigrees, and I imagine he's had a Louisiana bred along the way, because of course at one time Al Stahl trained for him, but he bought a $200,000 Matoli filly early in the day, and then paid $340 for a Good Samaritan. Nobody sniffs out oddball pages like Seth Klarman.
Yeah, you know, and this is the perfect sale to do that kind of thing too, because you get to see them on the track and see the potential in them, and go for those odd angles that maybe other people are missing.
He did it with cloud computing, right? Frisian Fire, and he makes a habit of this. I guarantee he's not done. And who else can we see that? Peter Bradley with a couple of purchases, a Gunrunner Philly for $280,000, I should say. Excuse me. Cherie DeVoe with a couple of pricey acquisitions, a Constitution Colt for $500,000. From Demerick, and a Oscar Performance.
She has that partnership that she buys for. I think this is the fifth year of the partnership that she puts together. So she was buying for that partnership.
Who else?
I thought there was also Oliver St. Lawrence also going to Dubai as a Star Guitar Filly for $200,000. I thought that was an interesting purchase.
Wow.
To go overseas, yeah.
How about that?
And I believe that was a nice pinhook for Elaine Richardson and Kevin Nuckley. I think they bought that horse for $100,000 and she sold here for $200,000.
Samantha Siegel jumped in, bought a Justify Colt for $400,000.
Yeah, that Colt is a half to Lady Aurelia, actually. And I think originally was an RNA and then they got it done after the sale.
Very nice. Who else did you talk to that you expect to hear from here over the next 3 days?
I think we're going to hear a lot about Omaha Beach in the next couple of days. He's had some really fast workers, and there's a huge buzz around him. So I think we're going to be writing about Omaha Beach a lot this week. I know there's an Into Mischief at Waver Tree that sells later in the week that is expected to do really, really well. And I think we're going to have – I think yesterday kind of set the table. It sort of was a solid opening, with not spectacular, but – solid, and I think the rest of the week from here is just going to explode.
I should probably ask this name Sid Fernando next, who is very familiar with the Japanese lineup. But Mitsu Nakuchida, two purchases, a Knight of Thunder Colt that Eddie Woods presented for $300,000, and a Gunrunner Colt from Hidden Brook for $200,000.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the horses that are bought overseas and then come here to Pinhook. There's a No Nay Never that worked really well that they bought in Arcana last summer, and they brought him here to Pinhook. So it'd be interesting to see if that angle pays off.
It felt like kind of perusing the middle price. It felt like a good day for the middle market.
Yes, exactly. I think we say this every sale, but it started off a little slow. It seemed like there were a lot of buybacks in the beginning part of the sale, but then it sort of hit its stride and things were getting done more quickly. And yeah, it did seem like a solid middle market. And that's something that people were saying at March, was it wasn't really a broad buying market. Like it was just, there was kind of a hole in the middle. And I think people were expecting, because of the larger number of horses cataloged for this sale, that there'd be a bigger buying bench, and that would move the middle market a little higher.
And call it, the $30,000 to $100,000 range looked like some people were able to, maybe fill some orders, essentially.
I mean, that's what they're saying about this sale. They've said it for years. There's something for everyone here. There's enough horses that you can get a horse at any level.
Well, and that's good, because they'll. I'm just looking at some of the other names. I mean, they're going to scatter all over the country. I see West Coast. I see middle, mid-American racing names. Eric Foster bought four horses. Look at this.
The April sale has become the go-to sale. I think that it's borne out every year.
Well, and I think I think we'll also, after Preakness, I think Timonium will be big as well.
People are looking work on that dirt track.
Exactly right. You mentioned a name or two. What do we have on the Pinhook front? Give us a little bit of. I'll give Muirfield a plug. What's the nothing but net successes, and are there any high priced Pinhooks that we're going to see here today or tomorrow?
Well, you mentioned that Justify that sold for $400,000. They had bought that horse for $50,000 last year, so that was a nice Pinhooking score there. It seemed like Grassroots Training and Sales, they always buy in bulk and they buy on a budget, and they always seem to do really well at this sale. They had a Flame Away that I think they bought for 50 and they sold for 200. So yeah, those names that we always see, I think they're going to do really well. I think I mentioned the No Nay Never. That's actually owned by Alec Bregman, the third baseman for the Houston Astros. And he started buying a few years ago and has decided to consolidate more with Phillies than with Colts. So he's offering three Colts this week. They all worked really well. I think there's a No Nay Never, there's an Omaha Beach, and a Twirling Candy. So he's an inadvertent pin hooker. I don't think the plan when he bought these horses was to pin hook, but he's decided to focus on Philly, so he's selling these three Colts this week.
Very cool. Who does he work with?
He has horses with Waver Tree.
Very nice. And now I'm catching up here on... I printed out yesterday's pin hook guide, but I did not get a chance this morning to do it. So now I'm looking. I did mention in the opening when I gave a few top liners. Very nice day for Joe Applebaum and Off the Hook.
Yes. He had that nice pin hook that I can't know. I'm like.
He had the Mendelsohn.
The Mendelsohn filly. It was a pin hook for Geffelston Farm.
Yeah. And also the Omaha Beach. That sold for $375.
I believe that was a homebred. I don't think that was a pin hook.
Okay. And you know what?
It might be the other way around. One of them was a homebred and one of them was a pin hook.
I got you. Because we talked last week. Our friend Dr. Politi, Joel Politi, had that Bolt Doro for $375. That's the one that McCracklin, I didn't realize that Joel had one in the sale.
I think Tom McCracklin has a good few ones coming up later in the week, too. He had a good Magic filly that worked really well on the last day of the Breeze Show.
Here's actually the Mike Ryan for $300. I saw the name on Dot Dot, and I know that's an early Marshall Graham Truxton stable, and that was a Munnings that they offered. And that was a $225,000 yearling. And sold for $300. And actually, Ten Strike was busy buying, too, because they bought the one that Bill Harrigan bred, the Audible, for $350.
It's always interesting to see who's buying and who's selling. You know, somebody sells one for a lot, and then they turn around and they reinvest right away.
Well, exactly. Well, and also those that, that win, the big hit... on the racetrack and turn right around and
right, yeah. They realize it's a lot of fun and an easy game.
Exactly right. All right. Well, we're often running day one in the books of the big April sale, and they're starting in about 10 minutes. So we'll let you get ready to write the stories that we'll read about tonight.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chief.
I appreciate it, Jessica Martini, everybody, and TDN. The coverage always great, and you'll typically the 8 or 10 stories every morning or later tonight when the edition hits newsstands, meaning your computer. Sid Fernando is going to join us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. And speaking of Hill & Dale, in today's TDN, John Secura with a letter to the editor, and haven't had a chance yet to read that. I think we've got. Do we have? I think we do have Sid. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Just catching up a few more tidbits from the sale. Are you going over? You going to go over for a day or two?
I don't think I will since I have my new puppy here.
Puppies at sales are very well received.
Yeah, that's true. I just need to get her second shot before I can really take her out. So that's not till May 5th.
I love it. So that's Oaks Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you better, all right, get an early morning appointment. It is funny one thing I've learned over the years from travels, going to things like, we've got the the cross country Saturday at the horse park for the Land Rover 3-day event. When you go to 3-day events and when you go to to a hunt meet or jump races, and also at horse sales, a lot of times there's people selling puppies. They bring a litter of puppies.
And yeah.
It's kind of funny. I've not something that I knew existed until I started doing this.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in Kentucky at sales, there's a couple that sell puppies, and I've since come to, been told, and apparently it's a big thing. These two guys raise a lot of dogs in Kentucky, and a lot of people buy from them. So, like David and Gordo, for example, he's got a Jack Russell from them. I was actually talking to him about, before I got Gina, my puppy now, about getting one, and he explained this. I forget their names, but these guys have, you know, they breed a lot, and apparently it's really well known. In fact, Francis has a Doberman that's 12. They bred that one too, and so these guys have a huge following in Kentucky. That actually, when I went to Ocala for the March sale, April Mayberry had a Jack Russell, and that was from these guys too. That one was related to David's one. And so there's this big network in Kentucky, particularly of these guys, you know, that sell at sale.
Hey, that's funny. And yeah. You know, there's also, it seems like there's certain breeds and certain, you know, certain connections. Well, you know who would be a great conversation for this is Carol Rio, who bred Mucho Macho Man, and who also has had, you know, Best in Show at Westminster with the Boston Terriers.
Wow,
is it Boston Terriers that she? I'm almost sure it's Boston's that she breeds. But there's also the Rhodesian Ridgebacks that the Baileys, Jerry Bailey. There's somebody that's close to the game that is involved with Rhodesian Ridgebacks,
and yeah, they're nice dogs.
And you see them too. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Tina and I we've debated. But we just can't. We're just not around enough. I mean,
that's what I was going to say.
It's too much work.
You need to, especially if you're getting a puppy, you need to be around. In fact, I was talking to Barry Spears the other day. He was debating about a puppy. I said, you got to be there. You know, because I got this puppy at 8 weeks. She's 10 and a half now. And, you know, the first week was like, you know, an infant. I had to take her out all night, like every 2 hours. But, you know, they pick it up really quickly. She's now sleeping 10 hours through the night in her crate.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm getting sleep. And she's just fantastic. But, you know, they get into everything. They got a big teething stage, you know. So you do have to really be around them quite a bit. And, you know, it suits my lifestyle because, you know, I work from home.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, you got it.
But you're traveling all the time.
Yeah. And it just doesn't. Tina. We got the cats. The cats are the way to go.
Cats. Yeah. And Barry's got a cat too. Yeah. Cats are definitely the way to go if you got an active traveling lifestyle like you know you do and Tina's at going to school and you know.
Well, we had a breakthrough this winter, Sid, because the cats barely came into the house the whole winter. They came in maybe 3 or 4 nights when it was really cold. Otherwise, they stayed out. They got these little heated houses on the porch.
Oh, so, wow, nice.
Yeah,
that's
so,
great.
Yeah,
my cats are out all day. I got two, one's 16 and the other's 4 and a half. Mostly they come in at night, but the 16-year-old always comes in. I bring him in. The other guy, Frankie, stays out, you know, maybe once every 5 days. But, yeah, they love it outside here. I mean, these guys were apartment cats in Brooklyn. So, I mean, it's been fantastic for them.
Well, it's about... Tina says that these will be the last four cats. She says, "Yeah, I better not
four
show
cats.
Up.
Four cats, wow.
Yeah.
Four cats.
We have
That's
four.
That's great.
Well, she says, though, there were no more. We've got two of them came off of Saratoga, off the racetrack. And we've had others actually off the racetrack. And then one just showed up. I was on my way to the racetrack, and I called up to Tina. I said, "Tina, there's a kitten out here. You got to come get it." She goes, "No, there isn't." I said, "Yeah, there is. There's a kitten. There's a kitten hiding by the corner of the porch." And sure enough, we ended up. He's turned into a. He's a bit of a problem. And then we got one. The one that we adopted, where I got my hair cut in Vermont, and he's really a country cat. Kirby, and they were trying to give away kittens at the salon, so I said I'll take that one, and
that's great.
Yeah, we love cats. I've had cats forever. Got a question. We have a question, Sid, off of Twitter, and it's worth asking. Actually, our friend Lou Arellino is asking about the introduction of new blood. And this sort of came out, I think, from just earlier with Dick Powell. If you heard Dick's reference, we talked about the Japanese. And you covered that last week. But talk about the introduction of outside lines or lines that are fresh, let's say. Lou's asking if that's needed to advance the breed. Usually
yeah, it's a really good question, but I'll start it off by just touching on what you and Dick were talking about. In the Japanese environment, for example, the racing program there is built for more stamina than anywhere else. For example, their version of the 2000 guineas is a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half, 2,400 meter derby, and then they've got the, 2 mile, close to 2 mile, Sang Ledger. But it's a stamina program, and they've, through the years, invested so much in a lot of stamina, bloodlines that, particularly, Shaddai and Yoshida's, they followed a time-tested formula, which is when you've got a lot of stamina built up in your population, you do need some speed, and that kind of explains why they went after Dre Fong, who was a champion sprinter. And he's the sire of Continuar, and Mind Your Biscuits, as you mentioned, the sire of Derma Sotogake. But they do that to try to balance it. You always need to keep injecting speed into a population, especially one like in Japan where it had gotten so saturated with stamina. They saw this firsthand organically in a horse that came up in Japan and then became a top stallion, and that's Lord Canaloa. Lord Canaloa was a top-notch Japanese sprinter, and he's been utilized with a lot of these Sunday Silence lines. I got Almond Eye a lot. He's a great stallion, and basically what you're looking for is a stallion that will blend really well with the population. In theory, Franco Varola, the breeding theorist, used to talk about these type of speed stallions as trans-brilliant stallions, meaning they're brilliant horses that meld well with stamina. and you can then continue to get classic horses with more speed into them that you might not with, you know, others. In this country, for example, you had Mr. Prospector and Danzig, both at Claiborne, both speed horses, and obviously they got they crossed well with the stamina lines, and you got good classic type horses and staying horses. So, getting to his question, and by the way, one last example: even in Europe, the Aga Khan, similar type of ethic to Japan, where there's a lot of stamina built up in his broodmare band. Well, he put to stud his horse Siuni, son of Pivotal, who was a two-year-old and a sprinter, never won past 7 furlongs. And of course, Peter Brandt's arc winner, Satsas, is by Siuni, and Siuni has turned into a great stallion in Europe and gets classic horses. So that's that part of it. And the second part that your Lou asked is that, yeah, it is vital to bring in new bloodlines. And this country, it exploded in the early, from the 1920s onwards with great imports. Sir Galahad, Bulldog, that Teddy line became so prevalent here. Then in the 1950s, you had Nash Rula come in, in the 60s, you had Rebo and Seabird, in the 80s, 70s, 80s, Cairo, Blushing Groom, Sharpen Up, a bunch of horses that did come in, and they've helped the craft and grow the sport. So it's always great to have that. And we haven't had a lot of imports in this country recently, but I think part of that has to do with how countries are in terms of cash. Every time you look at a country that gets wealthy, like in the 1900s, for example, Argentina was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. They imported all these European British horses there, and that was a foundation for their growth. Likewise, in this country, as I mentioned, from the 20s onwards, really wealthy and was able to import horses. Japan, we've seen that with Japan. They've done that, and particularly with broodmares in Japan. So I think in this country, I think, we're kind of due to get some imports here. I think getting to his question, I think it is important.
Well, and one name I was waiting for you to include was No Home.
Yeah, No Home was Australian.
Yeah. And of course, Gene Goff, Dash Goff's father, and the success they had with No Double. And
right.
There's a litany of this. One thing that's interesting about the conversation, and I'm thinking about what John Sikora specifically has tried to do, because John has tried to bring in those kinds of stallions. He's trying it right now with Lost Treasure. He tried it with Indigo Shiner. Bringing in Southern Hemisphere or European stallion lines to try to invigorate or catch a wave.
We've had three really good Argentine stallions in this country. Four Lee, who got four go, and of course, was broodmare sire of Nureyev, Lord at War, and most recently Candy Ride.
Right.
that cross-pollination is really pretty important. I did leave out the fact that, you know, Europe exploded once they started bringing the Northern Dancers over there. And, you know, it made the Coolmore's operation take off, really. It was a Kickstarter for them. And Sadler's Wells, for example, has created a dynasty over there. And then, of course, Danzig's son, Danehill, did the same thing. So there's another example of how bringing in foreign bloodlines for them made their racing ecosystem blossom.
You just said something actually that makes me think of a corollary question. And when you said Dane, the Danish mayor Rosard that got unusual heat.
Yeah.
And what he has wrought as a stallion in North America, how unusual is it for an imported mare to bring, you know, something different to the party like that?
Oh, it's important, but of course, you know, the mares, just numbers game. They come in and they have one foal, whereas a stallion can quickly populate an environment. You know, the Japanese have had these great stallions, and they've been bringing mares in constantly, and that's obviously, you know, been a big boon to them. But it's important here too. I mean, the history of this country also is dotted with great imports. I mean, think about La Troyenne, who came here.
I was just about to bring her up. Yep.
You know, that's one of the biggest gushers that we've seen here. It continues to pay dividends.
It's amazing how often you look down, you know, the female family, and there she is. It's astounding. And of course, herself, you know, a winless racehorse, and it's an amazing it's an amazing story, and it takes people like a Colonel Bradley. I mean, there's a reason that the patriarchs, the pillars of the turf, as it, you know, we had it referred to as part of the Hall of Fame announcement yesterday, the people that devoted their lives essentially to, you know, crafting the breed and developing lines.
Yeah,
and
that is
horses.
A big part of that's a big part of it, and those owner breeders that spent some time and did craft. We're still seeing, you know, the Phippses, for example. I mean, you still see how vast their influence is, both in stallions and, of course, even more so with these broodmares, that, you know, obviously a lot of them actually descend to La Troyenne.
And you know, Bradley, I'm just reading. I just went to her page, and Bradley bought her. He went to Newmarket and bought her. She herself was bred by Marcel Boussac.
Yeah. Who is another great breeder.
Exactly. Now, and all the, the Tessio, it's amazing, Sid, that, in regards to Lou's question, that the premises of the foundation that go into breeding, and when you talk about Nix, the basic premises are unchanged, right? I mean, there's not been, you know, any revolutions in conceptually in breeding that's changed?
Yeah, I mean, every major breeder, obviously, you know, the way these crosses or nicks or whatever, however you want to call it, the way they originated is back then, each farm was self-sufficient. They would have a stallion, he'd age, they'd have his daughters, so they'd look for a new stallion. And then they'd get that new stallion and breed that old stallion's daughters to that horse. And usually, you know, if they hit, that pattern became, you know, that's how that pattern kind of started. I mean, look at Claiborne, you had Prince Quillo, you had daughters of Prince Quillo, that they were bred to Nash Rula. And then they were bred to Nash Rula's sons. In the case of Secretariat, it's his son, Nash Rula's son, Bold Ruler, with something royal by Prince Quillo, created Secretariat. Also, another son, Never Been, the son of Nash Rula, bred to Milan Mill by Prince Quillo, around the same time, created the great European horse Mill Reef for the American Paul Mellon, Rokeby. And Paul Mellon, by the way, an Anglophile, he kept Mill Reef at stud in Europe, in England. But you know, that's basically how these kind of things work with breeders. And so when you introduce new lines, you can always sometimes get a very unexpected result. There is a corollary to this, which gets back to Lou's question too. Sometimes if you don't do it and you have a really closed breeding program, it starts to wane. And the perfect example is Marcel Boussac, who you mentioned with La Troyenne. Boussac had this penchant for breeding to his own stallions. And ultimately, at the end of Boussac's career, that was one of his downfalls, was that he was only breeding his homebred mares to his homebred stallions, and there wasn't too much introduction of new bloodlines. And it led to a catastrophic collapse that took place actually as his own business, the textile industry that made him famous, was collapsing too. It all came together in a massive collapse. Of course, Yaga Khan ended up buying Boussac's mares and stock, and that reinvigorated the Yaga Khan, you know, by bringing in this new bloodline. So it all ebbs and flows, and history is a great guide to, it's humbling too, because it's important to keep a historical perspective on what can happen to closed populations.
Similarly, probably a good spot to mention that I saw earlier today a TDN alert that Justify is going to get back to shuttling to Australia for shuttle duty, and you know, to cover mares in the Southern Hemisphere. And you know, it's amazing that everybody's cooing over Japan's success, and of course, you know, American bloodstock is instrumental in the success. And it's kind of funny. I mean, in Australia too. I mean, the shuttling that's gone on. I mean, there's between Scat Daddy and you would think that, knowing that how Scat Daddy was shuttled, that Justify is going to be just as eagerly, you know, sought.
Well, you know, it's interesting with Justify. You know, he did shuttle early when he,
right.
And so now those two-year-olds are having great success. It was a cautionary tale because Scat Daddy did not have great success. Neither did Unbridled Song. But Justify is having success. So they let Umar masterfully allowed Justify to go there to capitalize on the newness, this Triple Crown winner. Got some crops on the out there, and then wisely kept him here when you get to the third and fourth crops, when there's not as big a demand. Now that they're hit there with his first crops, they're sending him back. I mean, they're absolutely masterful in the way they manage stallions that way, you know? And so it is kind of an exciting year for Justifier down there.
Well, and of course, it's always a little disconcerting. There's already a tremendous physical strain on stallions, you know, during their seasons, in one hemisphere, let alone, you know, getting not much of a break and you know, then covering however many they're going to cover down there. And it does seem that, you know, any number of them, you know, we end up losing.
It seems to have a high mortality rate, that's for sure. If you look it over, you know. It's not hard to see why. I mean, it's not the physical strain, the newness of new environments, you know.
Yep, the ship.
The actual
physical shipping.
Yeah, the physical shipping and just, you know, like you said, two hemispheres of breeding without a break, it does wear a horse down.
Well, it's involved and it's a strenuous activity. Multiple covers of mares a day for 4 months, 5 months. You know who I also think of in this discussion is More Than Ready, right?
And he was exceptional because he absolutely thrived on it. Obviously, lived well into old age and was breeding. He's almost an exception to it.
Well, there's people that the lifestyle agrees with, travel and that kind of thing. It is fun though for those that do look at South American racing, and you see the American stallions that that were featured and are prominent in, you know, in the bloodlines in South America and Central America, some didn't even shuttle. Like a horse like Subordination went down and basically, you know, enjoyed his career as a, you know, South American stallion.
Yeah. So the South Americans for years used to take horses American horses that obviously didn't have a big race record because that's all they could afford. And their big selling point down there, their ace in the hole really is the land. You know, I've been down there so many times and it's absolutely amazing how yearlings grow like weeds there because the soil is so rich and they've got, you know, so much expansive land that, you know, you could take a stallion, for example, like a consultant's bid. It's on a bold bidder who didn't do much here. Take him down there. Took him to, I think, Haras Vacacion. And that's where Bayacoa was bred, raised there, and then came here, you know. And so they were producing similar to Florida, you know, Steve, horses that were really outrunning their pedigrees. And lately, of course, they've been able to get better horses down there.
Always an interesting departure. And thanks to Lou for the question that got us
Lou got a great question there, and I'm glad we were able to talk about it.
I love it. Sid, we just seeing if there was anything, because we
what have you been doing in Kentucky, by the way?
To be honest, the radio show and then I kind of these first couple of days, I kind of collapsed, to be honest. And
have you scheduled the trip to Hillendale yet?
I'm gonna hopefully go as early as tomorrow, and we are going to Keeneland on Friday. I'm going to
Who's we?
Lenny Shulman and I. And
Oh, you're traveling with Lenny?
Well, Lenny lives. Lenny's there, and he's going out for George Krikorian for Warlike Goddess in the Elkhorn on or the Bewitch on Friday. So I'm going to join them, which should be I'm looking forward to.
Oh, it's going to be a great trip for you there, and you know you obviously get firsthand look at everybody too.
Well, that's one of the big objectives. I've always said that. People say, "Well, why do you go for 2 weeks?" To come here on Saturday or Sunday and have Derby week. You know, basically 15. It's not even 15 hours because Friday. By the time you get to Oaks Day, Oaks Day is a kind of a blur in itself. So you can't be prepared for this adequately.
Yeah.
At least for the way I have approached it over the years.
Well, you're a meticulous person, and you put a lot of detail-oriented work. Preparation into this show, so you know.
Well, thank you.
We thank you for it.
No, I appreciate it. One last note today, because I haven't had a chance to mention Keeneland coming up here, and it is of course the last 3 days of the spring meet, and two 2-year-old races today, the first and the fifth. We got the boys in the first, and then. The fillies take center stage, and just glancing at this, it's actually it's funny. The card, I printed the first, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth. The sixth is a turf sprint, which I usually don't pay a lot of attention to, or get overly excited about. But Bound for Nowhere returns today as a 9-year-old. So you can look forward to that, and I don't know if he's going to come out. He's going to be 2-5. In fact, he's 2-5 on the morning line, on Nick Tamaro's morning line, and he is 3-6 lifetime at Keeneland. Drew the 9-hole. He's got Rosario. I tell you, there's a horse in this race. Since this came up, I don't know if we're going to have time later. And I mentioned Eric Foster earlier because he bought I think 4 horses yesterday at OBS. Johnny Unleashed comes back here, is 30-1, is going to be every bit of 30-1, and I think he's the horse you want to use underneath Bound for Nowhere.
Who's that horse?
Johnny Unleashed.
Oh, right.
He's just a nice turf sprinter, and he's never won at Keeneland, and I don't expect him to win today. But he is coming back up to a good race, and as it happens, a year ago, Foster did something very similar with him, bringing him back in a graded stake. This was last fall. He brought him back at Kentucky Downs, had been away 3 months, brought him back in the Big Rich Turf Sprint, the grade two, and he did not run well. But then he came back at Keeneland less than a month later, and ran very well to be second to Mark of the Z, who I actually used him the other day. But Johnny Unleashed is going to be a giant price, and I think he's the key horse underneath Bound for Nowhere in that sixth race today.
There you go.
All right, that's an approach. These two, I'm just looking at the 2-year-old, Sid, to see if there's anybody we should. No Name Never has got. The Coolmore Blue-Eyed Soul, who's 7-5, with Wesley having a very good spring, certainly better than last year. Here's Ben Colebrook with a Midnight Storm, Catalina Cruiser, Fausto Gutierrez, Express Cruiser, with Ferran Peterson riding. And here's Copper Bullet. So there's quite a few first crop stallions. Louis Mendez is already running this Nurkan a second time. And then in the girls race, which goes as the fifth, there's a More Than Ready, as it happens. Titania's Dream, for Jason McCutcheon. But first crop sires. Well, here's firing line with a. There aren't that many firing lines yet. Who, of course, had trouble getting his. He had what he had a back issue, right? That kept him out of service. His first chance. And here's a World of Trouble. What a world.
Is this a turf race or a dirt race?
These are dirt. These are all the 4.5 furlong, 2-year-old dirt races.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see the World of Trouble one.
Is this the first one? Or let me see. I don't know how many others. Let me see here. If this is what a world. This is his first runner. World of Trouble gets his first. Wesley's also got a horse in the fifth. Barbtourage, an Into Mischief, bred by Alpha Delta, and the 4-5 favorite for Stone Street. So Wesley, there's no stopping Wesley. He's like a rash.
Yeah, he's really amazing the way he gets him ready to run.
It's crazy.
That colt, American Rascal, boy. Was some kind of debut.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I actually texted him after the race and congratulated him.
Yeah, that.
I mean, it was breathtaking, really.
Well, and the fact that, you know, the fact that he, you know, there was some contested lead and then just ran away. I mean, just ran away and hid from that field. There is also... And again, Seth, we'll see if Seth, there's no guarantee that Seth looked at Keeneland today, but I will also mention the fourth race. This is a first level allowance going a mile on the grass, and Chad Brown brings back that maiden winner from Gulfstream, Exact Estimate. This is Jeff Drown and Don Rachel, a Woodford Into Mischief colt, and that catnip that we talked about with Michael Stidham the other day on Monday. This is a John and Susan Moore homebred. This is the Kitten's Joy out of Masquerade, the sibling of the good stake horse of theirs that Michael discussed with us on Monday. So some good racing today at Keeneland as they get ready to turn things over to Churchill Downs on Saturday. Sid. Thank you, and next week we'll be looking forward to those always important Sid Fernando Derby and Oaks selections.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. We have some clients with horses in the races, so I have to forewarn everybody. I'm going to be biased. It's a big deal because you have 20 horses in this race. You have a crop of 19,000. And, you know, when you can get some of your clients' horses into these races, and I think we've got three, Angel of Empire, Jason's Road, and Hit Show.
Pretty amazing.
If you can come up with three from a crop of 19,000, to help your clients in a race like this, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. Not to pat myself on the back. We're a small part of the equation. And it's all the kudos goes to the owners and the breeders. But it's, you know, we obviously our office will have a big rooting interest in those three. And I actually like Hit Show. I liked him from the day he broke his maiden. They gave him like a 57 buyer, and then they bumped it up to 60, and I was talking to Barry Spears and Chuck Simon about it. I said, I really like this colt a lot to progress, and knock on wood, he's one of those that actually, you know, realized his potential, and so he's a horse. I think we haven't seen the best of him yet. I think he's going to really like the distance, so I'm really looking forward to him, as well as Angel of Empire for Albaugh, because that was a $70,000 Keeneland September yearling from later in the book. Albaugh normally, Jason Rauch, they don't, you know, they buy more expensive horses, And, you know, hats off to them for deciding to go for this horse. We had him as a best of sale candidate late in the books, and they went for it, and they bought him for 70, and they own him outright. So, you know, they don't all have to be expensive horses.
No, and that's actually gratifying, of course, for, you know, for people that don't have, you know, the budget, and it happens every year.
It does.
There's smaller operations, and there's people.
Medina Spirit was, you know, a 32-year-old and a $1,000 yearling.
Yeah. Look at the owners. Who do we talk to? Well, the Amistoys and the. And oh my gosh, Joel Marr's owner, that Frank Sumter, with the Tapizar, with Wild on Ice, another one. I mean, a homebred, a Texas bred, and that actually should be a kind of a story.
Exactly. I mean, those are the great stories in this game, you know.
Very much. Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see that.
Well, confidence game. You know, confidence game was a tiny investment.
With a huge pedigree and a tiny investment, so
yeah,
he overcame quite a bit from what stifled his price. And I remember I spoke to April Mayberry about him because she broke him and did the early training, and she said he never missed a day. It just shows you, you know.
Ray's Kane was $180,000 yearling. Mage was a $290,000 Timonium. That's a little bit on the higher end of...
But what did he sell his yearling for?
I'd have to look it up. Blazing Sevens was $225,000 Saratoga yearling. I mean, not outlandish.
And he was a horse that we also did the mating for Tracy Farmer.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that counts. Doesn't that count? Almost.
Since he went out, Jace got in.
That's true.
One of our guys went out for another to get in.
There you go. I love it.
Yeah.
And, of course, Richard Santulli bred Jace's Road. We'll see if there's any further, you know, between now and Monday, entry day, because there are horses that are on their way here, specifically Skinner, that would like to get in.
Skinner, it's a shame because that horse is peaking, and he's got the pedigree and the running style. He's got the sire.
He's got the trainer.
He's got the trainer. He's got the guy who picked him out, David Engordo.
Yeah, it'd be nice if, I mean, I thing is, you say that, oh, it'd be nice if he could get in, except that it would mean a huge disappointment for somebody else. So
it's hard to cross your fingers and wish the best for people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if they demur on their own, like Blazing Sevens, and they've got a different idea.
That's fair play.
Exactly. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. Well, Sid, this was fabulous as always. And are you coming next week?
Oh no! You know, I got my puppy Gina here. She's been, by the way, lying next to me the whole time while I've been doing the show. And in fact, the funniest thing is. My wife Cynthia, she had to go to New York. She's going to be gone for a month.
Oh wow!
And I can't go because of because of this dog.
All right. Well,
although I'd rather be here in the sun.
I hear you. But you got, I mean, to have Dennis Alva and Gary and Mary West to have this kind of level of involvement I see you with them so often with your clients. On the big occasions. So, but either way, you'll enjoy it wherever you are.
Yeah, absolutely, I will.
Work Thoroughbred Consultants, everybody, and still, you know, there's another month of covers yet to come. So, if there's any late season, if you need late season help, get a hold of Sid and Roger. Sid, we'll talk next week.
All right, great talking, Steve. Have a great trip.
You got it.
Have a great stay.
I appreciate it. Let's take the break. Second one, Corey Nakatani is going to join us next to celebrate his election to the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. Corey Nakatani next, and then Seth Merrow, who we've been promising daily for a week. Stay with us. Hour three. Actually, we got 50 minutes of hour three to fill out. So, Corey and Seth to round out the Wednesday get-together here on Sirius XM at the Races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips.